You might have noticed there's been a lot of legal back and forth in America recently between Apple and the FBI over data contained on one of the San Bernardino attackers' iPhones. First, the FBI insisted that Apple provide access to the data by hook or by crook. Apple refused, saying that they couldn't break the phone security and wouldn't deliberately weaken their operating system's protection of privacy. And then, at the start of this week, the FBI suddenly withdrew the request, saying they'd worked out how to access the phone without Apple's assistance. Today, an Arkansas prosecutor who's needed access to another locked iPhone for another case has asked the FBI for help, and they've said, sure, why not? It's been characterized as a battle between national security and civil liberty. But is that fair? To help us sort our zeros from our ones, it's a pleasure to welcome our resident expert, Stilgarian.
Good evening, Casey.
Good evening, Stilgarian. Thank you very much for popping in tonight.
Well, my pleasure.
Let me start by going back to first principles, because I'm sure there were many people who heard about this case and said, yeah, Apple, come on, stop mucking about and unlock the phone. There's national security at stake.
That's right. It's a fair argument to someone who doesn't know about the niceties, isn't it? And you go, well, yeah, okay, they want something. Apple, why are you being so stubborn?
Yeah, what can you take us through Apple's response to that?
Yeah, look, they said basically no, but I can explain why. Most, well, pretty much all technology companies in the West, in the United States and Australia and so on, will comply with legal requests from law enforcement. I mean, in many ways, they're required to do so. And sometimes, under the law, there'll need to be a warrant to do that, and in other circumstances, there won't be. So in Australia, we have mandatory data retention now, so the telcos and the internet service providers keep a record of the phone calls we make and when, and when we connect to the internet and so on. And law enforcement can access that with good reason. And
how do they prove good reason?
This is where it gets controversial because basically any officer of rank superintendent and above can just sign off on it, ask for it if it's related to suspicions of a crime that counts as a serious crime, which is defined as one which could carry a prison penalty of 2 years or more, or which is defined as a terrorism case, and they generally have those sorts of penalties, or affects the public revenue. So that could be everything from...
That's a nice elastic little provision, isn't it?
Look, it is, but at least the rules are tighter than they were before, where it was kind of wide open, and people said, well, what is it? You know, the RSPCA can get access to your phone records, but... If you also saw that brilliant Four Corners episode last year where they dissected corruption and illegal handling of dogs in the greyhound industry, well, that's what the RSPCA was doing with that access. They were uncovering that sort of thing. Mm. So, look, there's always this kind of spectrum of, yes, we want law enforcement to do their job and catch the crooks, but also we don't want them to go too far because, after all, they have guns and they can take away our freedom and put us in a cell. So there have to be rules around that. And, you know, I think there needs to be a discussion in society about, you know, when we change those rules and why. But to get back to Apple, they have, like many tech companies, been taking the privacy of their users and the security of their users more seriously, especially in the wake of Edward Snowden's revelations about, 2.5 years ago and continuing since then, as we've become more aware of the powers that law enforcement and surveillance agencies actually have. And so a discussion has happened, well, do we want that to happen? In the case of technology companies, they're not just selling within the United States. I mean, Apple sells around the world. So do all of the other tech companies. And there are two reasons why they want to protect their customers' data from law enforcement. One is that, well, they're serving the customers, not law enforcement. Mm. Law enforcement is concerned about the broad safety and security of society collectively, but a technology company is looking at the individual privacy of its customers. The other aspect to it is, if they're selling around the world, will customers in other countries buy their products knowing that Americans can kind of look in on what's going on?
That's right. And I guess there's a question for American society too, saying if you are going to cede that kind of access to us as a multinational company, do you then, you know, feel obliged in some way to cede that kind of access to the other superpowers.
Exactly. So it's, I wouldn't say it's much easier, but it's more consistent at least to say no. And over the years, Apple in particular, though the other companies are doing similar things, Apple has really been at the forefront of saying, no, we will actually design the operating system on our iDevices so that even we don't know your encryption keys. You're the only one who knows it. So what they've been saying in recent cases, such as this one, which is related to the phone belonging to one of the shooters in the San Bernardino, shootings in December, the FBI says, well, we want the data on that phone. We want to see whether these people in San Bernardino were part of a wider Islamic terrorist network or whether they were working alone. Okay, that's a fair question, and we can argue about whether they should have access to the phone or not. And that was the legal case. So the FBI saying we want it, and Apple was saying no. They said, well, look, we can't do that. It's not possible. So the FBI had got a court order saying, or was trying to get a court order, saying, well, Apple, you will make a special version of the operating system which allows us to get in there.
Which can then be sort of installed in place over the operating system that's already
right.
on the phone.
Because the worry was, you know, you have to punch in the unlock code to unlock the phone. When you start making mistakes, it starts inserting a 1 minute delay before you can try again. They're actually little robots that look like a grid of little fingers for rapidly typing in all of the combinations of passcodes on phones. And law enforcement and bad guys use them to try all the combinations. So Apple has a facility that will slow you down. So after three fails, it'll slow you down and put a minute between each attempt. And on the later models, including the one in this case, fail 10 times and the phone will wipe itself.
Right.
You know, it'll just say, hang on, someone's trying to break into this phone to protect the user and their data. We'll just wipe this phone. It's clear that the phone has fallen into wrong hands. So the idea was that the FBI had asked for an instrument, by which they mean some technical measure, to install a new version of the operating system that was a custom version that did not have that delay and facility, so that they could then go away and try all the combinations. And Apple said no, or the argument was no, because they said, look, if we do it for you, we by definition have to create a tool that can be used more generally. And once that tool exists, and you've got a copy and we've got a copy, then, who else is going to have a copy?
Yeah, that's right. Then the whole notion of that operating system being secure becomes sort of redundant because...
Exactly. If the analogy is, you know, if you create a back door into the building, well, it's not just who you want to use the back door can use it. The back door then exists for anyone else to use and anyone else who gets knowledge of it. That's the argument.
It's the notion of insecurity as a contagion, isn't it? It's that once it is created, it sort of spreads out and infects all aspects of the business. And this would be of particular concern for Apple, they have gone out of their way, haven't they, to present themselves as the less hackable or for a long time the unhackable.
Yes, and look, some of that's a bit of a myth, and maybe we can talk about that later, but the key thing is for Apple now, this is part of their selling point. In recent designs, they have been working towards this, and in fact, their iCloud service, which allows you to store your files up in Apple storage and share them from your computer, your laptop, your MacBook Pro, to your iPhone, to your iPad, and so on, currently, your files are up there, but the Department of Justice in the US could do a court order at Apple, and they would have to reveal your files. Apple is now working on a system whereby that is all encrypted. Only you have a copy of the keys. Apple doesn't have them. Apple can't have them. It's an extension of what they're already doing on the individual phones. That's why Apple couldn't help the FBI directly. The phone's encrypted. You know, you need the passcode to unlock it because we don't have the keys. We don't know what the passcode is because the system is designed that way. And Apple is increasingly putting that in their systems around the world. Apple has said quite publicly that your private information is not of interest to us. That's the direct opposite of Google with its Android operating system, where your data becomes part of Google's great ocean of data, which they can then analyse for all sorts of things. Look, there's plenty of convenience in that. But that's the trade-off. So that's what it was all about. So that's where we were up to until only a few days ago. where that was the standoff between Apple and the FBI. And just the other day, the FBI said, oh, we'll drop that case. We don't need your help anymore, Apple. They've found another way in. And we don't know what that is.
Well, we don't really. We don't know. I guess we can say we don't know if that is. We don't know if it's just the FBI have moved to the footing where they say, you know, there's nothing in this for us to continue to bang our heads against the wall.
Well, you know, it was a bit of a fishing expedition. I mean, we don't know what is on this phone. Mm. So, yeah, it's just someone's phone. I mean, I suppose that's the question they wanted answers to. Is this part of, or are these two people part of a wider terrorism network or not? But that's not an imminent danger. You know, and that's why they had to go through this. If there was a crime that they were investigating and that was the phone, then they could easily get a warrant to search it. But the owner of the phone is dead. The two gun people killed them. Were killed in the gun battle.
Mm.
So
it is a speculative mission in any case. Yeah,
that's right. They don't need to prove that these two people did these murders of 14 other people. I mean, it's all there, and they're dead. So you can't prosecute dead people for a crime. So it became this moot point, and that's why it was such an interesting case. And particularly as Apple made the point that. Look, we've complied with every other legal request until now, because we do, you know, we're good corporate citizens, we do the right thing by law enforcement, but this time you're asking too much. And of course the other side is saying, well, look, it's, you know, you've helped us before in the past, it's really only about this phone, which really wasn't quite true. We had the ludicrous thing where a DA from somewhere said, oh, we have to unlock the phone because there might be a dormant cyber pathogen on it. And everyone in information security, what the blazes is a cyber pathogen? That's not a thing we say. And then others saying, well, if you mean that there's some sort of malicious software on the phone that might then cause problems, if you unlock the phone, you'll be letting it out. You don't, want to be unlocking.
Let's keep it locked. Let's keep it locked.
Yeah, that's an argument for keeping it locked. So there was a whole lot of misinformed stuff going around. But the interesting thing is now the FBI says they've solved that. And we don't know how they did it.
It's kind of a delicious turn in the narrative, isn't it? Because it's been so set up with Apple going, we have the, you know, we are not helping with, we are the gatekeepers and not helping. And now the FBI suddenly have the info and Apple are going, can you tell us how you broke the phone?
Well, yes, because whenever security flaws are found in a product, the vendor fixes them in the next release. So Apple is keen to fix this vulnerability just the same as any others. The FBI is, of course, wanting not to hand over that information. But that raises the possibility that now that the hacking community globally knows, so there is a way to get into there like that, I wonder what they did. Mm. So, of course, the discussions have started and people are obviously trying things, and it provides more incentive to get in. And you know, that's a slightly older model of iPhone 5, iPhone 5C. Newer iPhones have more hardware protection. The operating system is more secure all the time. But even so, not long ago, a couple of months ago now, hackers were taking part in a competition, what's called a bug bounty, not for Apple, but for another organisation. And they found, allegedly, a way to break into, and again, a encrypted later model iPhone, and they won a prize of $1 million for that. Mm. Now, Apple doesn't have a copy of that vulnerability either. They don't know what that is. That was $1 million was paid. The hackers gave the information to the company running that, and that company essentially sells that information on to, maybe not the highest bidder, but we do know that they sell to various intelligence agencies or law enforcement agencies, I guess who wants to pay.
It's interesting, whereas in the case of the FBI solving the problem, there is some kind of potential legal requirement, isn't there, for them to actually relinquish the information as to how they got in?
Or is there? This is, again, a grey area in the law. I wouldn't like to call it one way or the other. Maybe an American lawyer, a lawyer of any kind, would be more knowledgeable of American law than me, perhaps. But we're still trying to work that out. As I say, this twist in the story has only happened in the past couple of days.
Mm. And it's still unfolding.
Mm.
it raises sort of a broader issue, which we probably don't have a lot of time to get into, but I'd like to just touch on it. Because in all this discussion, the poles of the argument have been presented as the national security of America versus the private civic liberty of its citizens.
Mm. Americans are much more attuned to these arguments than Australians, of course. Mm.
Is it a situation, because that's always presented as a dichotomy, and I know that you sort of take slight exception to that.
Well, as do quite a few people in the information security field, and look, InfoSec is something that I write about quite a lot. The argument goes that if we are to have security, then we need to give up privacy. That is, we need to open up our lives to surveillance, for want of a better word, by law enforcement and the spooks, and that's the trade-off. But in fact, it doesn't really work that way. It's in fact that your privacy is protected by security, and the security of the nation is protected by keeping its information secure. There's another argument that's running in the law, or potential law, in the US and the UK at the moment, and my money is on this coming up in Australia at some point in the next year or two, is that there's all of this encrypted data now. People are encrypting their data. They're using encrypted phone applications and so on. And unlike the unencrypted phone system or unencrypted email, spooks and law enforcement can't read the content of this stuff, and that creates a risk. So there's a kind of movement that says, oh, we need a way to unlock that encryption if we have to. So there needs to be, it's called variously a backdoor or a golden key or something like that, so that law enforcement can unlock it, and the vendors need to make their products so that such a thing can exist. The problem is that once such a thing does exist, it's not just encryption. We all use encryption, not just the bad people. We use encryption every time we bank online, every time we put our credit card into a shopping website, every time we send off medical information or whatever. And in fact, really everything should be encrypted, because who knows who's listening online? Unless your email is encrypted, essentially what you're sending is everything on a postcard. Do you really want to discuss your private family information or your pending business deals in that open way? So there's that. And, of course, the international issue I just spoke of. Well, if we're giving back doors to the US government, who else? There's the issue that, well, hang on, once a backdoor exists, information about that will eventually emerge. And once it's emerged, like, you can't brick the backdoor back up again. It's all of those products out there in use around the world will have this flaw. And sooner or later, everyone, bad guys and good guys, will know about it.
Yeah, and the moment, I guess, it becomes public knowledge, the folks with the greatest interest in keeping their information private, including sort of criminal syndicates and all that sort of stuff, will be working to create another thing that doesn't have a backdoor.
Well, exactly. And, it all through the history of electronic communication and digital communication and so on, exactly that has happened. It's a constant arms race. We had this battle in the 1990s. They were called the crypto wars. Encryption was kind of seen as this munition. There were restrictions on exporting it out of the United States, and kind of the geeks fought back. And this is kind of a rerun of all that, all of the same arguments again, probably because all of the legislators and so on are the next generation, and they're having another go because they don't have the background. The other thing that's interesting about this is that we actually get, like, completely made up examples of this. Like, after the attacks in Paris, the bombing attacks in, or the gun attacks in Paris a few months ago, or more recently than November or something, wasn't it? There was suddenly this, that we need to get into encryption because, the terrorists could have been using encrypted communications and we don't know that. It turns out that, no, they weren't at all. They were using completely open communications. It's just that the various agencies, weren't talking to each other or weren't looking in the right spot and so on. It doesn't help, And so there's this myth, or possibly a myth, that, if we don't have the ability to intercept all these communications, then suddenly we won't be able to defend the nation. Now, that argument ignores the fact that all of these communications and the skill to use computers and intercept and so on has only existed for the past few decades anyway, two or three decades. Before that, police had to get out of the office and go around and talk to people and infiltrate organisations and whatever. They couldn't just sit in an office and use computers to gather all of this information. So it's one of those things. The technology is neutral. The computers have helped both sides. Encryption has helped both sides. But of course, the arguments we hear from each side only talk about the benefits to the other side and the disadvantages to them.
Everyone is always ready to sort of refashion the narrative according to their needs at that moment.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just about out of time still, Gary, and so I'm going to veer briefly off that topic just for a minute and say drones, selfie drones. What world is this, Stilgarian? What world is this we have come to?
I know that everyone listening to this program will be a fan of the selfie stick. And just like I am, I love them. I'm sure you do too.
Oh, absolutely. Two or three. I need two or three a day.
Exactly. Well, an Australian company today announced something much better, which they've called flying selfies. It's actually a small drone helicopter, which you launch. It's got a little camera in it. It's about 30 centimetres high. And this little helicopter is designed to hover nearby. It has a camera looking down. It'll notice where in the frame your face is. So, it's looking down at that 45-degree angle that all good self-indulgent selfies are taken at. And you can wave the thing. And it also has motion tracking. So if you, say, down at the beach and want to make a little series of photographs, or I assume perhaps even a little movie, of you walking down the beach and looking up and waving at the drone, it'll follow you. So it'll track you and follow you wherever you go. And anytime you like, you can look up and smile and it'll take a selfie of you. So that's been announced today. At flyingselfies.com, people can see it. That's not a plug because I think it's madness, in my opinion. It'll sell squillions.
It appears to be an idea where the security issues we were talking about earlier will definitely come into play once folks are being followed by selfie drones.
My theory is that those two little rotor blades on top of the things, that's going in a face. Look, it's all fun and games until someone loses an eye,
indeed,
right?
Thank you very much, Stilgarian, for bringing us up to date on all matters tech.
My pleasure, Casey.